Thank you, Ross. I thought I had a deep voice. No. Ross has it. Well, we have people who want to talk to you, Mr. Hewlett. We have them from L.A. to Long Island. They're in Wisconsin, and they're in Buffalo, New York, and they're in Long Beach, California, and all that. So if you're up for it, we'll certainly do that.
Absolutely.
Many of them are like, they still think that we're too much into the political thing. I think everybody's pretty sick of it. But look, let me just state this for the record, friends. Seriously. This is not about bashing our current administration. It's not really about bashing the prior administration. It's about bashing the whole bloody system. The thing is out of control. We have two parties. And if you analyze them closely, you'll see that when they face each other, they're looking in a mirror. I think a fellow named Patrick McGoohan, who's recently passed away, played Longshanks in Braveheart. Back in the late 60s, he did a program, a 16-episode series called The Prisoner. And he stated very much the same thing. And it was a huge controversy, and it really kind of cratered his career for several years. But it looks more and more obvious all the time. Does it look that way to you, Mr. Hewlett, that the two so-called sides face each other and they're looking in a mirror? Yes.
Well, I wouldn't be the first to say it. And one of the golden elite, Samuel P. Huntington, wrote a book making precisely that argument, that we don't want the two parties to be fundamentally different. We, as the governing elite, him putting himself in that we position, he stated that we, as a governing elite, we need them to believe in those two parties. So when they get sick of one party, the Republicans, they can have an election and throw the rascals out, but there will be no fundamental shift or continuity in government policy. And Huntington is absolutely right. I don't agree that that is what ought to be, but it certainly is what we have been doing since World War II. And if you can't see that, you're being petty over the moral questions of conservatives and liberals that call themselves Republicans or Democrats. We're not talking here tonight about abortion. We're not talking about gay rights or gays in the military. We're not talking about prayer in school. We're not talking about moral issues. On the things that matter, and I use that terminology a great deal, it's threaded throughout the book, The Hydra. The things that matter are the only things I discuss and write about and talk to, speak to. The things that really matter to the government, the Republicans and the Democrats, have no different opinion.
Is oil where the most money is? And if that's the case, and if we're... I mean, did we make an assertion earlier that we roll into these countries to secure the oil or not? Because
there's
we're
no
not
question.
Getting it.
There's no question we do that.
Why are we not drilling
here? Actually would dare say that we're in Iraq and Afghanistan and now Libya and it has nothing to do with oil, then you really are too silly to be part of the discussion here.
Well, in that case... Should it be? It's not obvious to me, but maybe it's becoming obvious why we're not drilling here.
Well, now that's a completely different subject, but the same corporations are in control. It's like, for instance, if you had a whole lot of gold in your backyard, and I mean a lot of gold in your backyard, wouldn't you rather mine the gold in some other country and turn it into coins and sell it and keep your gold to yourself?
Yes.
It only makes sense. So why would they really want to drill a great deal here in the United States if we've got the greatest amount of oil on earth? It still only makes sense if you're a corporate oil man or a bank like Goldman Sachs that's in bed with the corporate monopoly oil system to keep drilling in foreign countries and selling it to America at higher prices while you sit on your gold mine of black oil, and it's yours for the future.
Understood.
That's called control, absolute control.
Okay. Well, that makes complete sense. It really does. So tonight, we're just Americans. We're not left. We're not right. We're just being as objective as we can be. These are just the facts. And as one of my favorite characters in literature, Sherlock Holmes, once said, once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains must be the truth. Yes?
That's why we follow the money.
You feel like taking a couple of calls?
Absolutely. I'd be glad to.
Well, on the wild card line, is Bob in L.A.? Are you there? Because if you are, come on in. I think he's getting in his car.
Hey, you hear me?
Hey, Bob. What
hey.
Up?
Hey, as I was gassing up, giving some less unfortunate person some gas for their car because they're out of gas at yesterday.
Good man.
Yeah, well, interesting guest you have on tonight. Yeah, I was wondering what your guest thinks about, I don't know, I mean, I see, it's weird. I'm the kind of guy who likes to see proof, you know, of things, you know, and I haven't seen proof of anything in these last two administrations. I mean, Obama to me looks like Oswald, you know. All we've seen is him speaking, Osama, I keep getting those confused, all these videos of him, clear video, first-generation videos. Now, intelligence videos from our enemies should be at least three or four generations that are degraded. These things look like they're sent directly to the White House. They're crisp and clear, and the audio's perfect, and it looks too scripted. It looks like Osama bin Laden is a patsy like Oswald was, and here's this guy in a house with a family and kids, no protection, no bodyguards, no guns, no weapons. I mean, it looks just like when Oswald was shot, you know, by Ruby right there, just to shut him up. And all these guys, like you're saying, they don't have their day in court. They don't talk. All they get is a hanging, like Saddam Hussein got hung, and we're just shooting all these guys. So I, you know, I don't work for the intelligence community. Maybe there's something, some reason for them doing this, but, you know, the way it looks bad. It looks real bad because none of these guys get to state their mind who they're trying to talk to. You remember when Saddam was being interviewed with Dan Rather, I think it was? And the U.S. government, the White House, had to edit that out for America to see. I mean, you remember that interview with Saddam and one of our American top American journalists. And it's just real sad that they had to edit out what he was saying. I mean, if you were to actually hear what he's saying, he probably said, yeah, I work for the U.S. government. I worked for the CIA, did all this stuff. And it's unfortunate what's going on in this country, and no one knows what's going on. You know, no one knows if our government's even working for us anymore. They're working for some foreign power, or like you said, General Electric or ExxonMobil. So I think Osama bin Laden was a patsy. That's what it looks like to me. What's your opinion on that?
Thanks, Bob.
Well, bin Laden admitted every terrorist act that he was behind. He took great care to broadcast it and take credit for it. He did bomb U.S. embassies. It was his responsibility, and he always took credit. He denied doing 9/11. But by the time George Bush had given his speech on the 22nd, the one that I refuted on live on the Jim Bohannon show, it was over at that point. The American people simply believed al-Qaeda existed the way Bush said it, and that was the end of it. If you want to really look at culpability, you have to look to our media. We don't have any Woodward and Bernsteins any longer. We don't have anybody that's going to cross that line and say, well, okay, if bin Laden did it, now this is Noam Chomsky's argument years after Craig Hewlett made it, if bin Laden did it and he's the most wanted terrorist on the FBI's website, why is it 9/11 listed as one of his crimes? Well, if you called the FBI at the time, they would say because there is insufficient evidence to suggest that bin Laden was behind 9/11. I did it. Others did it. Chomsky did it. But now it's over. That piece of evidence that he did not do 9/11 was that it wasn't listed on the most wanted poster of him on our own FBI website. And if you ask the FBI, which we all did, they would openly admit, well, there's insufficient evidence to say that he did 9/11. It
Excellent
can't get
point.
Any clearer than this for the American people.
No, and what a thing came out recently that some ridiculous percentage of the people that were polled don't believe anything that is released from the on the official level. They don't buy it.
That is true. The American people are among the most skeptical about believing what their government says. And then I'll be damned if you don't turn around and they say Bin Laden did this. There they are out in the streets with American flags saying, let's go get him. I'm at a loss at the ability of the American people to hold completely contradictory views simultaneously in their head. I used to think that was an indication of insanity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, fair is foul and foul is fair. Tell you what, we're going to take a little break and come back with some more of your calls with Craig B. Hewlett on Coast to Coast AM. Please stand by. Mr. Hewlett, we got another one out here, and we have several people. I wonder if Angelina in Long Island would like to speak with Craig B. Hewlett. Are you still there, Angelina?
Oh, hey, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my calls. And for the record, I prefer shows like this, and I turn off the ones that speculate about UFOs. I wanted to make a quick comment and then have a question. The comment is basically pointing out the irony in now so many of our government officials and reporters are saying that it's implausible for Pakistan government to claim that they're didn't know about the alleged Bin Laden compound, that it either represents ignorance or complicity. And that's pretty much exactly what most of us have been saying about the American government and 911. My question is this. About 2 years ago, there was another guest on the show, and he pointed out, he said that there were about eight Middle Eastern countries who were holdouts, who were refusing to get on what he called the international Rothschild banking system. He named those countries as Afghanistan, Iraq, then Iran, Egypt, Libya, Yemen, Jordan, Syria. And he said that they were all targeted for destabilization, which we're now seeing. So I was wondering if your guest has any comments or information to add about that.
Well, I don't really understand what that person would mean by the Rothschild system at all. The system that's in place right now is still the U.S. dollar, and Saddam Hussein did make the mistake of going publicly stating that he wasn't going to pay any longer in U.S. dollars in receipts for oil. And OPEC, blinked, and there are those that say that was the last straw under the Bush administration, why Iraq was added to Afghanistan. That may be stretching it a little bit, but, I've got reports on my desk that clearly stated something fairly close to that about oil, that, we couldn't tolerate Iraq no longer being part of the oil system, and they needed to be brought into the world oil, and that meant the dollar system. And Afghanistan was mentioned. Some of the countries she mentioned, no, that they were not mentioned because they're not neither oil rich nor do they have any natural resources or is there any interest at all, such as Tunisia or Sudan. But they're not wrong. That individual is not entirely wrong in saying that these kinds of objections in corporate boardrooms and at the highest levels of our government, that is how it's being discussed. They're looking at the world the way the United States was at the turn of the last century last, during the early 1800s, where everything was the Wild West and the states didn't exist, but that's how they viewed it. We'll go into these places, there's oil here, there's copper there, there's gold. My God, there was gold. If that meant kill every bloody Indian that was on a reservation to get the gold, then that's what we're going to do. Well, now the United States is the leading political power behind a corporate global regime that views the entire world in exactly that lens. This country has copper. That country has tin. That country has oil. And by God, we're going to get it. It's not going to sit idle. And if the governing elite of that nation are nationalistic, not globalistic in their thinking, then they have to be removed from power. Saddam Hussein was, I believe, removed not because he was Muslim and not because he was a communist and not because he was a threat to his neighbors or America. It was because he was nationalistic. He felt the oil and resources of Iraq belonged solely to the Iraqi people. And that will not be tolerated in the new global corporate regime.
Yeah, that was a pretty brash thing to even suggest, especially if it was never going to come true to begin with.
Well, you know, Saddam was a well-educated man. He played chess, but clearly he doesn't play as well as he thought.
That's it. Got a first-time caller, Sam, in Long Beach. Are you out there?
Yeah, I'm out here. How are you guys doing? Good morning.
Good morning yourself.
You know, I'm really with you guys on one thing, is that actually I can't stand either party. It's like a puppet show to me now. And I think your guest hit upon it earlier with when he brought up somebody like Kennedy or somebody like that. I think he had means, plenty of money, and it was like, no, you're going to do it this way. And he said, no, I'm going to do it this way. And then they're the ones that end up dead. I think that there's plenty of people that go into the, want to be the president, that want to change things, want to bring things together. And I think that they're kind of hit with somewhat of an ultimatum, take the cash and a buyout and do it the way, status quo, or see you later, you know, is what ends up happening. The same thing with, you know, JFK's little brother was like a shoo-in to win that, his nomination before he could even get very long up the, you know, up into the presidential. I mean, he was gone, you know, so I don't know. I just have a funny feeling, and I think your guest kind of hit upon that a little bit. I don't know if you would go into more detail on that.
Well, Bill Hicks is a comedian. He did go into some on that, and I don't know if you've ever heard of him or heard him, but to paraphrase, it was done as a comedy that when you become president of the United States on your upon your inauguration, they take you about 11 floors below the White House, and they show you a tape of the Kennedy assassination. And then they say, get it? But that's kind of a comedic way of saying that when every president actually does get elected, unless he was CIA or Joint Chiefs like George Bush Sr., then it probably wouldn't be much of a necessity to go through it. But George W. and Bill Clinton, and in this case, Obama, when you become president, you become automatically privy to all of the dirty skeletons in America's closets. And it's made very clear to you that this is the way it's done, and this is the way it will continue to be being done. And nobody, in my opinion, since Kennedy, has that kind of perceived power as John and Bobby Kennedy had at the time. And I say perceived power. I think they were both very audacious in their stand against some of the powerful elite in this country. And you must know by now that by everything I'm saying that there's no bloody way Oswald did it.
That's for sure. We're going to take our hard break now, and we will come back with some more of your calls. Delighted to have Craig B. Hewlett with us tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Please stay with us. I know this isn't a music show. I know this is a conversational show, but that is one of the least recognized and underappreciated guitarists of the whole genre. That's Frank Marino. Okay, Frank, if you're out there, I'm here for you, pal. Craig B. Hewlett is our guest tonight, and he is just absolutely, he's about got my brains running out of my ears. There's a visual. Craig, can you tell us, how do we resist? How do we resist what is coming our way? And is there any chance that we can turn this thing around? We will discuss this in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John Wells in with you tonight, and our guest, Craig B. Hewlett. This is about the fastest 2 hours and 40 minutes I've ever experienced. Give us some ideas on how do we as a people, let's say that we were able to quiet down long enough to focus on a single goal, which is like saving our nation. How do we resist? How do we do it?
Well, now, between my military background and my corporate background, and being an entrepreneur, I've never worked for a major corporation, but I've had them as clients. If you're a lifelong entrepreneur, you probably have learned a little bit about guerrilla warfare and survival amongst the corporate giants that will either put you out of business or buy your company out from under you or undermine you in one way or another. So you do need to learn that research and analysis and this kind of thinking that you're hearing me put forward is a form of resistance. Even Che Guevara believed that simple education, research, and analysis was part of the revolutionary fervor, that it's part of you. If you're going to resist at all, it has to begin with knowledge, and that knowledge has to be the correct knowledge. I'm not saying there's only one way. Like I said earlier, there's many different places to start, but if you're sincere about your research and wanting to understand, you will find that Aristotelian golden mean between the left and the right. All I can tell you is extremes of both left and right, or any viewpoint, are always wrong. You know, Aristotle wrote of the golden mean, and he didn't just mean it as a moral objective in your life, a balance, but as an intellectual one. You know, I probably have written over 1 million words, 60 white papers, 4 books, and I've done thousands and thousands of hours of lectures and media. But in the end, it was the research that really did help me learn to live with what my country's becoming and still be able to get up at, you know, midnight to 2 a.m. or whatever it is right now, wherever you are, and do this in the public interest. I do believe that I have an obligation to share the research and my analysis because of that alone. Look, John, the phone's not going to ring off the hook, and I'm not going to sell 100 books. Nobody's going to buy the book in large numbers. Nobody makes money doing what I'm doing. I have to earn a living elsewhere. But if you don't try to find out the facts of the matter about what I'm talking about, your resistance will be wrong-headed.
Understood.
You'll find yourself either on the left or the right, but you're not going to have the balance in your analysis that makes you actually your resistance viable. You'll just be either swept under the rug or swept into one of the corners of the crackpot groups that are out there that believe they have the truth in a cosmological sense. I don't believe that I have a truth of such a nature. I have an accurate analysis about the things that matter to government that can ruin your world in this nation. That's it. That's as far as I go. I don't go any further than that.
Understood and appreciated very much. Would we like to speak to Josie on the wild card line from Wisconsin? Are you there, Josie? You've been holding a long time, if you are there.
Yes, I am. I'm so glad I got on. I've been, I agree with that earlier caller that said she turned it off for the UFO. I mean, I believe that could be possible, but this is much more important. I've always said I was so happy when I found out he was going to be on for a long time tonight, you know, instead of just an hour, because Craig B. Hewlett is one of my favorite. You're wonderful. You're so honest, candid, and we need people like you so bad. I really don't know how we're ever going to come out of this mess. You and Gerald Celente are my favorite guests on Coast to Coast. And I when I heard that Bin Laden was shot, I thought the first thought I had was, uh-oh, he knew too much. Because if they had gotten him to court, he could have spilled the beans. And you know how that goes. He was just another patsy, like the other caller said. I've lost so much faith in the government because it is really the United States of corporations. They don't care about us people. We're, like somebody said, I don't know who brought this up or who coined it, but we're just a bunch of useless eaters if we don't make a lot of money, you know. I just honor you so much, and I could cry just because there are people like you, but there's not enough.
Well, hopefully there'll be more after tonight. Thank you very much.
I've gotten reprimanded a few times. I have a client base of clients that pay me for my analysis and research. And, you know, if I get a couple of signal bumps in me, I do start talking about being irrelevant. And maybe that comes from, you know, it took me a long time to write the book, The Hydra of Carnage. A really long time, because I never believed myself to be a writer or an author. You know, I could write aphorisms and Nietzsche and thoughts, that kind of thing. But I never saw myself writing a nonfiction book that was geopolitical. And after you do something like that, and you do thousands and thousands of hours of radio, I probably get one caller in 1,000 like her that just called in. But, and I'm reminded that that's what this is about.
Well, it is.
That's why I should be doing this. No other reason. It certainly isn't to sell books. That's not going to happen. I wouldn't want to read my book. Hell, I wouldn't want to listen to me on the radio. What am I saying?
Well, just in case somebody does want to read your book, where could they get it?
Well, you know, I've got a website, craigbhewlett.com.
Okay.
And there's a phone number there. It's fairly easy to, you know, get it.
And that's H-U-L-E-T, Craig B.
H-U-L-E-T.
Hewlett.
Yep. Craig B. Hewlett, H-U-L-E-T.com. And
well,
that's also where you'll find my email address. And I do read all my emails. But, you know, I'm thankful for that last caller because, you know, this can weigh on you. It really can. I live out in the wilderness. And I don't have much contact with the human race for a really good reason, obviously. I'm not exactly going to get along with most people's viewpoints. So I kind of keep to myself. But there's no other reason to do this on my part, to resist in this way, unless someone like her calls in and says, well done.
Well, you know, Hank Thoreau stayed away from people, too. I think we're still reading his material as well. Let's see what Glenn, west of the Rockies in Colorado, has to say. Glenn, are you still there? If you are, you've been there a while.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Good man.
Good to hear you guys tonight. Great show, John. Craig's nice to hear somebody speaking out with this stuff. I have a specific question. A while back in December, I was reading about Chinese aircraft carrier killer missile, caught another link about their carrier program, and then, you know, a week or so later, they came out with the J-20, and, you know, right there when Robert Gates was showing up. And I just was wondering, you know, with John's comment earlier about how we're in Libya to keep the Chinese out, and with that in mind, how does all these other developments kind of fall into that? You know, I know that their carrier program, they were saying that it's not going to be fully active until, you know, 2020, something like that. And was just curious what you think about that and their attempt to project power worldwide with a blue water navy.
It's wonderful to hear somebody's actually following these developments, because that is one of the most crucial developments of the last decade. China will have control of the seas south to Japan. They will contest us. Whether it goes global to the point of a war, no. I certainly don't believe there's a chance of a nuclear war. But, you know, China is in our future, and the American people Boy, are they not ready for this. I don't know whether it was Walmart that lulled them to sleep or Chinese restaurants, food. Something's lulled the American people to the point where we're not paying attention. In 20 years, China is going to dominate the globe. But here's the point. The American corporate structure, the monopoly corporate structure, and the monopoly banking structure, they prefer the Chinese model over America's free enterprise entrepreneurial model. So America, as America, will be left in the background, just like Mexico was left in the background, and Peru will be next, and on and on. The American people and the American domestic economy does not interest the corporate elite that manage this corporate regime. They're perfectly happy with China, though.
Isn't that strange?
So many of our jobs have gone to China.
It's amazing. And there was just a report about how inhumanely the iPad, the people that build the iPad for Apple over in China are just treated like beasts.
And Apple's going to surpass Microsoft. So the American people, we're watching the demise. I'm watching the demise of my country and my countrymen to the point where your standard of living is going to be in the toilet in 20 years. You have no idea what inflation looks like or feels like, but by God, you're going to. And the shifting of jobs overseas, that's going to continue. It'll never come back. Logging, manufacturing, shoes being made in America, it'll never happen again. There's no way to stop it. So your next thing has to be, how do you survive it? And how do you start at a point of resistance on your part?
Yes.
And I can't answer that for anybody individually. Collectively, I just don't have much hope.
You know, I really appreciate that answer. That's about as honest as it gets. What can you say if the horse is already out of the barn? Chase it? You're not going to catch it.
I wish I was like George Bush. You know, what do you do when the horse is where the national, what was that speech I was supposed to be saying? The most illiterate, badly spoken president in our lifetime, and people still think he was a great president. I'm shocked at how we've gotten as bad off as we are tonight, to be honest.
I'm still wondering if he didn't do it on purpose. You know what I mean? Remember the won't get fooled again line? Fool me once, won't get fooled again.
Exactly.
Give me the remote. Hey, let's see. Is Kevin still hanging in there east of the Rockies in Buffalo, shuffling off to Buffalo? Is Kevin there? Well, Kevin, are you there? Kevin's not there. Kevin, I'm sorry you gave up. I really am. What about Will in Madison, Wisconsin? Wild card number 4.
Yes, I'm here.
Bring it on, brother. What's your question?
I got an interesting. I'm sure a lot of listeners recommend that the Nobel Committee must create a new category, Nobel Truth Prize. And Craig B. Hewlett and Coast to Coast hosts must share in that new Truth Prize. No UFO pilots and grays to be nominated. Kindly Google Phoenix, FINNICS, and a number 7. Now, I'm an older gentleman, retired cancer researcher, PhD, but I'm not smart. That's why I listen to shows like this. Back in the early 60s already, I appeared on television and radio shows, talk shows, warning people about the takeover of America. I don't know why I was so sharp already then, but I'm a lumberjack son, born in the Northwoods. Depression 30s, there were no jobs and hardly any deer to be found because people were killing the deer to save the meat because they had nothing else to eat. In fact, it was so bad in some areas, people even took the bark off trees and took the inner sides of the bark to make bread. That's how sad it was, and that's what we're coming to now. My question is among the people that control America and the world, those playing a crucial role, the Israeli secret police, the Mossad, Goldman Sachs, Robert Rubin, England's Rothschild family, are they the ones who run America, especially now the secret police, the Mossad, and therefore must all presidents be afraid of being murdered if they don't toe the line? What are they told in that floor, 10 floors down in the White House when they become president?
Okay, well, there was way too many questions I'll put into one. This may shock some people listening on your show, but if you do sufficient amount of research, you'll discover that there are reasons why Jewish people rose in the banking industry. It's not because they were inherently evil. It was because it was a Catholic world, and it was illegal for Christians under the Catholic order and popes to charge interest. Well, Jews didn't believe, so they got to be bankers and money changers. There are natural evolutions of things like this. Believe me, we do not have to look beyond our shores to see the face of our enemy here in America. And it is in corporate America, not the corporations like you and I would own, that do business and create jobs and compete with other corporations here in America. I'm talking about the few number that are centralizing in the banking industry, aerospace industry, making airplanes, auto industry. All of this centralization, merger and acquisition, is creating fewer and fewer of the most powerful. And they're neither black, white, Jewish, Mexican. You can't put a label on any of them. Samuel P. Huntington, one of their own, coined the term, and I really get it, Mr. Huntington. They're gold-collar workers. They're global, and they don't have any allegiance to any nation state or the people of any particular country. That's the face of the new enemy. And unfortunately, it hides behind a corporate veil that our Supreme Court says must be treated as a natural person.
Extraordinary. It has been a real pleasure to talk with you tonight. I'll tell you what, that is the fastest 3 hours. I'm getting a polilia and repeating myself, but that's the fastest 3 hours I ever sat through. We really have to do this again sometime. Okay. Your website is craigbhewlett.com. Phone number's there. Email is there. And, hey, don't go changing. Let's stay in touch, okay? I sure would like to talk to you again sometime, and I know the people out in listening land would love to hear you some more.
Well, as I told Kathy when I first started doing this almost 40 years ago when I first talked about it, I'll go talk in hell if I have to.
Well, it very well may come to breakfast. Take care, Craig. Thanks to Jason, Tim, in for Lex, Princess Lisa, Lion, always, George, and Art for starting it all. Until we meet again, resist on every level of your consciousness. And be well.